listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Wow. So yesterday we heard, and in fact we mentioned it on the program, that the first Ebola case to actually be diagnosed inside the United States happened. There was a fellow on a plane from one of the West African countries, Liberia, Sierra Leone, Guinea, one of them, who was not sick when he got on the plane, was not sick when he got off the plane. They've got scanners now that are looking for people with temperatures. But he went to, what was it, Dallas or Houston? Dallas, I think it was, and got sick. And now he's in a hospital, and he's in critical condition, and they're trying to figure out what to do with him. So you would think, you know, that this would be a time for us to have a conversation about public health or Ebola or, you know, hey, isn't it great that here in the United States we have a fairly sophisticated public health infrastructure? We could track who were the people who had contact with this guy. Everybody gets it. There's good communication. You know, let's not get hysterical here. But on the right, not so much. You know, the right wing. case in point, Michael Weiner. Michael Weiner is one of the most well-known right-wing talk show hosts. He performs under the name Michael Savage. And, Michael Weiner has been going off for years on strange things like, you know, we've got to kill all the Muslims and it's a filthy religion and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. You know, just and what this demonstrates is that the hard right really doesn't have anything to sell except fear and hatred. And if they can sell fear and hatred enough, then, you know, they can turn people against a sitting president, for example, which some in history would have called treasonous or at least seditious. They can turn people against, well, for example, clip number one here. Here's Michael Weiner, a.k.a. Michael Savage, on his program yesterday.
That means because Obama broke down our borders and has eliminated any testing or screening of illegal aliens, whether they be coming from Guatemala, El Salvador, Nicaragua, Honduras, or now from Africa. Because of this open-door policy, the CDC has confirmed the first Ebola case in the United States. This is heartbreaking. It's an act of treason. The treason was committed by your government.
So, okay, we have this public health crisis going on in Africa, home of black people. You've got young people fleeing death squads in the Middle East, in Central America, who were put there by, in large part, the Reagan administration. But they're brown people. And it's treason. It's treason that they be allowed to come into the United States, right? And the CDC, oh, my God, you know, it's a government agency. We can't trust government agencies, right? Clip two.
Those responsible, in my opinion, are the Centers for Disease Dissemination. The very same cretinous political appointees who are going to tell you not to worry are the ones who should be tried for a crime against humanity.
And in fact, he goes off on this. I mean, you know, this guy's the head of the CDC is a political hack and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And the real, it seems to me, and I don't know Michael Weiner personally. I listened to his program for years. I think he's a brilliant broadcaster. Although I strongly disagree with his worldview and perspectives, but Here he's going off on this, you know, what about the civil rights of the healthy? I don't think anybody's talking about civil rights here in either direction. It's about public health. But anyhow, here's a clip three, his rant on this.
Yes, it is transmitted casually through the air. Never mind what the hacks in the government media complex tell you. Don't you listen to a word this liar says? He should be arrested for a crime against humanity. He's going to be speaking in 18, 20 minutes, and he's about as useful as the head of the Secret Service. Another empty suit put in there for political purposes, put in there a long time ago to make sure that the dirty Q word was never, ever used, quarantine. Oh, don't quarantine someone with a plague. It might violate their civil rights. And what have I asked for the last 30 years? Don't the people who are healthy have civil rights as well?
Well, the, you know, the guy's in a quarantine unit in a hospital. But I think the biggest point, and keep in mind, Ronald Reagan's first speech when he was running for president of the United States, his first official speech as a candidate was in Philadelphia, Mississippi, the place where three civil rights workers were famously murdered, and he gave a speech on states' rights. It's all about the color of people's skin. And here again, Michael Wiener, performing as Michael Savage, talking about Detroit and South Africa. Gee, you think there's something in common between them? Here he is. This is clip number six. I'm sorry. Yeah.
And they are responsible for this. Just as they are responsible for bringing infected children in from Central America and doing nothing to stop it, they are now responsible for permitting Ebola to arrive on our shores. The wonders of nature that permitted this nation to be miraculously, almost miraculously isolated from third world diseases is now over. We're devolving from a first world nation almost into a second world nation right in front of our eyes. What happened in South Africa will soon be happening throughout America. Study South Africa and see what happens with the wonders of diversity. Take a look at cities and towns that were once thriving, clean, safe, efficient. They look like wreckages, like war zones. Sort of like Detroit, inner cities here in America. Who are you going to blame it on now that Ebola has come to Dallas? Me?
Yeah, South Africa really should go back to apartheid, and Detroit really should go back before Brown versus Board, right? You know, after that decision, Daddy Koch, Fred Koch, and the John Birch Society, they had posters all over the country in the mid-50s, early 60s. Impeachable Warren. How dare he say we've got to desegregate the schools? And of course, Michael Wiener, performing as Michael Savage. This is the liberal thing to do. This is clip eight. Bring in diseased people and send money. Well, here, I'll let him say it. He says it so well.
What a liberal thing to do is bring diseased people in. That's very liberal. That's very humanizing. In fact, there's no reason that we in this lily-white nation of ours, the
really?
Parts that are, have any right to have a better health than those in the third world. Because if you want real equality, I mean, you have to spread disease around. Just as you have to spread poverty around. The Obama way is to spread disease around. That way you'll all get down with the third world people and know what it's like to be sick and homeless and begging. You understand that? You understand how this works? Only when America is reduced to ashes will we be equal to some of the third world nations that Obama is apparently using as a role model to turn this country into this third world nation that he envisions for us.
So let me get this straight. South Africa worked better under apartheid. Detroit worked better under something. Frankly, I remember Detroit working better before Reaganomics, but that's, you know, a whole other thing. And President Obama is bringing diseases from countries filled with black and brown people to a lily white nation, the United States, to try to reduce us to their degenerate level, right? Do you get the message? Do you get how there's a huge component here of don't look at what the Koch brothers are pushing, tax cuts for rich people, corporations moving their money overseas, an economy that's about to crash again because now we're prompting it up with subprime auto loans, another giant crash coming. Don't look at Paul Ryan trying to cut Social Security and Republicans trying to cut Medicare. Don't look at the fact that 550 jobs were dumped out of the Secret Service because of Republican sequestration. Don't look at any of that. Look at those brown people who are sick.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And even if they're not sick, oh my God, I'm going to tell you they're sick. After all, they're brown people from a third world country. We'll do that. Here's a couple more, little quick pieces from Michael Wiener performing as Michael Savage. The first, this is clip number seven. I think, you know, this kind of falls into the general category of be terrified.
The world as we know it is over. They can't protect the president. They can't protect the people. They knowingly bring infected children in from Central America. They're about to grant amnesty to another few million illegal aliens. God knows how many of them are infected with illnesses or terrorists. There's no end to this.
Right. Country is screwed because of brown people. Don't you get it? Terrifying thing. Terrifying thing. In fact, you know, the president, I mean, this obviously is malicious, right? He's obviously trying to destroy the United States of America. We should impeach him. Clip number four.
The country will bust apart like the Titanic hitting an iceberg unless there is an impeachment hearing to expose everything that they're doing, either by design or purpose. You're not going to get to the bottom of it, but you're going to stop them in their tracks because they intend to grant amnesty to millions of illegal aliens. How many of them are going to be infected? How many of them will be infected?
How many of them will be infected? You know, Guatemala has a national public health system or has a national health care program. Children from Guatemala who are showing up on the Texas border fleeing violence in their country have a higher rate of vaccination than Texas children. A quarter of Texas children have no health insurance. They've got the highest rate of uninsured people in the United States. Guatemala doesn't. But don't tell Michael Weiner that. He will, you know, his head will explode. So anyway, just some thoughts for the day. Michael in Antioch, California. Hey, Michael.
Hello, Tom. I just wanted to, I was singing a song last night from Bob Dylan.
Mm-hmm.
In one of his songs, he says, when you have nothing to lose.
Yeah.
Chris Christopherson also wrote, freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. And I was thinking about my brothers and sisters who work for the corporatocracy, like McDonald's and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
I want, if any of them are listening, I want them to know they've got nothing to lose by what they're doing. And I encourage them to keep doing it. In fact, they have everything in their hands for the corporatocracy to lose. So that's all I really wanted to say. It just dawned on me last night. I hope that maybe even Senator Sanders, when he's on the road, he can use some of those lines. But
yeah,
it's a powerful line.
If you're welcome. Thank you, Michael. Thanks for the call. And thanks for watching Free Speech TV. If you look at the history of movement politics in the United States, and particularly movement politics where it got really out there, where people, you know, the Flint sit-down strike, the Ludlow massacre, the Pullman Porter strike, the, you know, places where people literally put their lives on the line. What you find is that there's a very large element of truth to what Michael's saying. They were people who felt like they were pushed so far, their back was so hard against the wall, that it was like, you know, I'm gonna stand up and speak my truth because I'm pretty much screwed anyway. The problem that we have in America right now is that because of the availability of credit, because pretty much anybody can get a credit card, and average credit card debt in the United States right now is $27,000 per family. Because of the availability of easy credit, even somebody working at McDonald's may feel like they have a lot to lose if they lose their job. And they can get by. So, you know, we've got a country with an economy with some real serious structural problems. We'll be right back. So I just, you know, there's some of this that I think is worth, you know, pointing out. Number one, be afraid. This is what the right wing has to sell. This is no longer the land of the free and the home of the brave, right? At least Lindsey Graham doesn't, you know, think of us as a, you know, Lindsey Graham's hysterical. They're going to come and they're going to kill us all. Right, Lindsey, you know, crawl back under your bed, would you? Well, this is clip number seven. You know, we're all screwed. Here's Michael Weiner performing as Michael Savage.
The world as we know it is over. They can't protect the president. They can't protect the people. They knowingly bring infected children in from Central America. They're about to grant amnesty to another few million illegal aliens. God knows how many of them are infected with illnesses or terrorists. There's no end to this.
There's no end to this. And obviously the president is doing this maliciously. You know, turning American cities like Detroit into places like South Africa. Oh, my God. What does Detroit have in common with South Africa again? I don't know. Okay. And it's destroying our lily white country. So what should we do? Well, obviously, there is a solution to this. Obviously, it's that black guy in the White House's fault. We should impeach him, right? Clip four? I mean, isn't this obvious? Here he is.
The country will bust apart like the Titanic hitting an iceberg unless there is an impeachment hearing to expose everything that they're doing, either by design or purpose. You're not going to get to the bottom of it, but you're going to stop them in their tracks because they intend to grant amnesty to millions of illegal aliens. How many of them are going to be infected? How many of them will be infected?
Now, here's how the conversation, here's how I would have this conversation. Rather than saying, oh, my God, let's all be afraid, be afraid, be afraid. I think I've told you this story before. Back in the late 80s, as I recall, maybe the early 90s, I've spent a fair amount of time in India. We took over an orphanage, a community for blind kids, and a leper colony in India back in the 80s. I wrote about it in my book, The Prophet's Way, and I basically, every year I had to go over and audit these organizations and whatnot. I was doing this on behalf of the International Salem Group out of Germany. SalemInternational.org is their website if you want to see it. And on one flight over, I was reading an Indian business magazine that was talking about the fact that 10% of the population of India was infected with tuberculosis. Now, I don't hear Michael Savage screaming about about Microsoft or other high-tech companies getting H-1B visas for Indian engineers to come to the United States. But maybe I just didn't tune in on that day. I don't know, because Indians tend to have darker skin than Michael or me. But I flew into what was then Bombay and then to Hyderabad. And then I took a train for 9 hours across the country over toward the east coast to Rajahmundry. And as I'm walking through the Hyderabad airport, there's this guy, and I just read this article about how 1 in 10 Indians has TB, and 1 out of 10 of them has a form that is actually contagious. 90% of people with TB are not actually contagious. The body, walls it off. And creates these little sort of like zits, inside the lungs or wherever the body is, these little pustules or whatever, and locks it up. But 1 out of 10 people out of the 1 out of 10, so in other words, 1 out of 100 Indians has contagious TB. Anyhow, as I'm walking through the airport, this guy's just coughing his lungs out into a trash can. He's coughing blood into a trash can. And around him, it was completely empty. There was a circle that was probably about a 40-foot radius all the way around this trash can and the guy coughing in it that nobody would walk into. Nobody wanted to get close enough to this guy to breathe his cough, right? Because 8 dB is airborne and contagious. This should be a cautionary tale to us. And if what Michael Savage had said about Ebola being transmissible through the air was true, it should be even more of a wake-up for us to build and maintain, particularly in Texas, where Rick Perry is refusing to expand Medicaid, to build and maintain a good national health care system. I mean, you can sit around with Savage and all the other right-wingers all day long and say, he shouldn't be taking my money, he shouldn't be taking rich people's money, he shouldn't be raising taxes on the Koch brothers to pay for health care for poor people. Yeah, you could say that all day long until you're walking through an airport and one of those poor people's coughing into a wastebasket because he's got no access to health care. And suddenly, no matter how rich you are, no matter how good your health care is, it's going to come home. I mean, I don't disagree that having Ebola in the United States is kind of a scary thing and it's something we should pay attention to. But what it says to me, particularly in Texas, where Rick Perry refuses to allow the government for free to provide health and health insurance and thus health care to millions of people, particularly children, because he won't expand Medicaid as part of Obamacare because he doesn't want to give this president any kind of political victory. That what we really should be doing is expanding our public health care system so that everybody is covered with insurance. So if anybody gets sick, they'll go to the doctor right away rather than coughing all over you and giving you Ebola or handling you or whatever.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
So the logical response to Ebola would be, let's get everybody insured, but the right-wing response is, let's impeach the president. Oh, yeah, that makes perfect sense. 28 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Speaking the truth, the multinational corporations would really rather you didn't know all about. It's been reported that there may be a second Ebola victim in Dallas. This would be a close relative or friend of the guy who is right now in critical condition in the Dallas hospital. And this person is also being quarantined and being carefully monitored. And it will probably stop there, although it may go a little farther. But the fact of the matter is that they're paying attention. Now, here's one of the things that I find so ironic about all this. This idea that brown people coming to the United States, particularly children from Central America, are somehow a horrible public health threat to us. I'd like you to keep in mind that Guatemala has a national health care system. In Texas, Rick Perry's Texas, George W. Bush's Texas, there are 6.4 million Texans, a quarter of the population, who have no health insurance, and Texas children are vaccinated at lower rates than Guatemalan children. Why are we not talking about Texas? You want to talk about Ebola? You want to talk about public health? You want to talk about kids coming across the border who might be contagious with something? Oh, my God. Back to clip number one here from Michael Wiener performing as Michael Savage. It just to remind you.
That means because Obama broke down our borders and has eliminated any testing or screening of illegal aliens, whether they be coming from Guatemala, El Salvador, Nicaragua, Honduras, or now from Africa. Because of this open door policy, the CDC has confirmed the first Ebola case in the United States. This is heartbreaking. It's an act of treason. The treason was committed by your government.
Right. And he goes on to say that Obama should be impeached for this. We do have an open door policy. It's called visitor's visas. We get millions of I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I used to work in the travel business. Louise and I started a travel business in Atlanta in 1983, sold it in 86. And there are, I think it's over a million people a month. It might be over a million people a week. I mean, there's like millions of people that come to the United States every day. Go out, you know, I fly out of Dulles Airport. There's planes coming in from all over the world, and people are coming off the planes, and they don't speak English, or they got their phrase books. I mean, it's like being in Paris and seeing all the Americans walking through. Of course, we've got millions of people coming through this country. Some of them come in here without documentation. Does that mean that they're more likely to be spreading disease? No. But, you know, this is the right wing world. Is let's not talk about Rick Perry keeping a quarter of Texans from having health insurance. Let's not talk about that, because that's an actual public health crisis. Let's instead talk about impeaching President Obama because a guy flew over here from Liberia, and when he got to Dallas, he got sick with Ebola. And this is some kind of treasonous conspiracy on the part of a black president who has overseen Detroit collapsing the same way South Africa did, for obviously the same reasons. Equal rights for black people, presumably. I don't know. It's pretty amazing. I mean, it's in fact, this clip number six. Just play this one. This is really worth, especially the Lily. Maybe he meant it hyperbolically. I mean, let's cut Michael Wiener a little slack here. Here he is performing as Michael Savage. Clip number six.
And they are responsible for this, just as they are responsible for bringing infected children in from Central America and doing nothing to stop it. They are now responsible for permitting Ebola to arrive on our shores. The wonders of nature
that permitted this nation to be miraculously, almost miraculously isolated from third world diseases is now over. We're devolving from a first world nation almost into a second world nation right in front of our eyes. What happened in South Africa will soon be happening throughout America. Study South Africa and see what happens with the wonders of diversity. Take a look at cities and towns that were once thriving, clean, white, safe, efficient. They look like wreckages, like war zones.
They're full of black people now.
Sort of like Detroit, inner cities here in America. Who are you going to blame it on now? Now that Ebola has come to Dallas, me?
No, it's obviously the fault of the black people. We get it, Michael. I really do understand the right wing meme. Don't blame Rick Perry. Don't blame George W. Bush. Don't blame the Republicans who won't expand Medicaid. Don't blame the fact that we have a public health system in this country that, I mean, Texas yesterday, their state legislature got together and they were trying to decide, how could we possibly negotiate with the Obama administration to take those billions of dollars to expand Medicaid, but skim some of it off the top for our for-profit brothers and sisters? How do we make sure, and can we do it like Arkansas did? Can we take the money and instead of giving it directly to pay for people's hospital bills, you know, directly for insurance through Medicaid, can we take that money and give it to for-profit insurance companies so they can skim 20% off the top and kick that back to the Republican Party in the form of campaign donations? Can we do that? That was what the Texas legislature was discussing yesterday. And they seem pretty pessimistic about that, because even that would mean expanding health care for poor people. And, oh, my God, we can't have that. They're poor, after all. They shouldn't have health insurance. Anyhow, Chris in Darlings in South Carolina. Hey, Chris, what's up?
I think what a lot of people miss is the real fear that underlines the conservative point. They're scared to death of a black president because they know themselves. They know how they've treated black people all their lives, and they know how they would react if they had been treated that way, so they're just scared to death waiting for the axe to fall because they know Obama's going to exact payback as soon as he can.
Yeah. This was the I don't want to characterize individuals like that. I'm not going to go down that road. But Chris, I think you're right. I think you well said. Jim in White Salmon, Washington. Hey, Jim.
Hey, Tom. Last year, actually, it was a year ago on KGON, Portland, Oregon. There was a guy who was a welder. He's a welder. He had a feral cat on his property, and it was choking on a mouse. So he goes over and tries to pull the mouse out of the cat's mouth, and the cat bit him. Well, guess what? The guy ended up with the bubonic plague. They had him on the news. He lost all his fingers, feet. The disease originated right here in America.
Right. The principal carriers of bubonic plague are armadillos and fleas. But there's a fair amount of plague down in Texas from the armadillos.
Yeah. Yeah. But what this guy's missing is that humans are the end result of disease. The vectors are the ones that get us. We've got West Nile. That's by mosquitoes.
Right.
You know, you've got all these diseases, and you've got nuts like this saying that it's the cause of somebody coming here. I work in healthcare, and there's not one person that comes in to see me that wants to be sick. Right. So, you know, for this guy to say that it's the president's fault, he's just so full of crap. It makes me want to get mad because he's deflecting things.
Yeah. But the sad thing, or the unfortunate thing, I think, is that there's a huge audience for this. I mean, Michael Weiner, Michael Savage is heard across this country. And, you know, very, very, very good saturation, very good penetration. In part, as I said earlier, he's a brilliant broadcaster. He does a very, very good show. It's just that the contents of that show are, on some days of the week, very insightful, and some days of the week, just downright terrifying. Jim, thank you for the call. Carl in Nashville, Tennessee. Hey, Carl.
Hey, you know, it's weird that you're having this topic, because I was having a discussion with my eldest daughter. And she didn't know that once upon a time, Republicans used to get black votes in America.
Yeah.
She had no idea. She really didn't. And I've told her that, the damage is complete. I would say starting with Ronald Reagan going all the way through Newt Gingrich as far as people of color voting for the Republican Party. They don't have any message that resonates. I mean, there's no reason that I would ever vote for a Republican. And that's sad to say because 20 years ago, that 20, 25 years ago, that just wasn't the case. A guy like Bob Dole, a guy like George H.W. Bush could have had ideas that I agreed with.
Bob Dole himself came out 2 years ago and said he could not exist in today's modern Republican Party.
He could not exist. Ronald Reagan couldn't even exist, but that's a whole other story.
Yeah.
But a lot of people like to talk about the three-legged stool of the Republican Party. It's four-legged. It really is. It's the Warhawks, the evangelicals, and there's your Wall Street, your rich, your Romney, and then let's face it, let's say it what it is. Then you have the racist leg that they've used, and they have effectively pushed everyone away from them. My God, I was looking it up on the internet while I was waiting on hold. Mitt Romney, it was 82% of his voters were white.
Yeah. No, this was what you're seeing is the consequence of Nixon's Southern strategy. Nixon said, you know, well, let's take the white racists. The Democrats are going to give them away by signing civil rights legislation. Let's take those white racists. Let's pick them up. And the Republicans have been doing that since the 70s. Thank you, Carl, for the call. Since the 60s. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I'd say the last Republican national politician who wasn't badly contaminated by this was probably Dwight Eisenhower, maybe Everett Dirks. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Dave in Armstrong Creek, Wisconsin, watching Free Speech TV. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Hey, how are you doing, Tom?
Good.
You know this guy, Michael Savage, that you're playing clips on. He always throws around the term, they did this and they did that. And he's referring to the liberals. Well, really, there's only a handful of liberals that have any really true power in this country. I think the they's he should be talking about are the Wall Street bankers and the CEOs that are getting paid 300 times more than they're worth. And some of the Democrats that actually favor these policies, you know, he just uses that thing so loosely, and it sounds ridiculous to me. But
Yeah, you know, I'm with you. Well said, Dave. Thank you very much for the call. Lewis in Dunedin, Florida. Am I saying that right, Lewis? Watching Free Speech TV?
Dunedin, Florida. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Considering these folks in Dallas, I've lived in Dallas. I've traveled around. Are all those people in Dallas that racist?
That's a good question. I would say, obviously, there are good people in Dallas. There's good people all over this country. But in the South, racism is much more virulent than it is, generally speaking, in the North. On the other hand, there are those who would argue that racism in the North is simply different. It's more subtle, but as such, it's harder to stamp out. It's harder to identify. And therefore, arguably, even more virulent, more dangerous, more destructive, because it has this friendly face. You know, I'm sorry, that apartment just rented out last month, just an hour ago. We just rented that apartment out. I'm very, very sorry. It's so nice to meet you. That's how it'd be in the North, as opposed to down South. No, sorry, we don't want people like you here. You know, that kind of thing. So it's. Well, in the South, I remember when, 1983, when we moved from New Hampshire down to Atlanta, and Louise flew down there and met with a real estate agent to look for a house. The first question the real estate agent asked was, do you want to live in a neighborhood that is all white, or are you willing to live in a neighborhood that has some black people in it? And, you know, a mixed neighborhood. And Louise's answer to the question was, I would like a different real estate agent, please. But, you know, it's right out front in the South. In the North, they probably would have figured out a far more subtle way to ask that question.
I grew up south in Indiana, and I spent 5 years living in Atlanta, Georgia, back in the 60s.
Yeah.
And things have changed so much over the years.
Yeah, no.
They become racist over the years.
I think that what happens, Lewis, is that as the economy falls apart, as working class white men mostly lose their ability to provide for their families, to have a good retirement, to pay off their house, find themselves going deeper and deeper in debt, their long-term unemployment benefits, if they lose their job, have been cut off by the Republicans. As the Reaganomics has ripped the guts out of, it's at least destroyed half of what was the American middle class when Reagan came into office. At least half of them are now the working poor. Some people suggest the number is really more like 4/5. As that happens, those working class white people are asking the question, why did this happen to me? And right-wing talk radio hosts, extremists, and people on the web come in and on Fox News come in and say, here's what happened to you, quotas. What happened to you is a black person got your job. What happened to you is a brown person came from Mexico and got your job. And it engenders racial hatred. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. So, having a black president, a symptom of the blackening of America, which Michael Wiener, performing as Michael Savage yesterday, says is making Detroit look like South Africa and going in the same horrible direction as South Africa. Oh, my God, we've got to impeach this guy. Jenny in Plainview, New York, you are from South Africa? Jenny? Oh, Jenny, you've got to listen to your telephone. I'm going to put Jenny on hold, and hopefully we can get back to her, because I would love to talk to somebody from South Africa. In the meantime, Horacio?
Hey, good morning, Tom.
In San Diego, how you doing?
Pretty good. I'm calling for all these scare tactics, the border, and world terror. Okay? Uh-huh. Can you remind all these Americans, we had a war with Russia for 50 years, a Cold War, and no Russians ever came through the Mexican border or through the Canadian border.
Right.
The Africanized bees that they say that were going to come in the 70s, they never appeared. Okay? And in the border, and the president calling ISIS a world terror, when then all Americans should look at our backyards and look at all those nuclear weapons that are ready to fly in 5 minutes.
Right.
That's world terror right there. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
but
there's...
Yeah,
there are serious issues without worrying about whether we've got, brown or black people coming into the United States and whether or not they're carrying diseases. And in fact, the whole they're carrying diseases thing, this is what the WASPs, the white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, the power structure of the northeastern United States back in the 19th century, in the 1860s, 1870s, 1880s, 1890s, this is what they said about the people coming from Ireland when they didn't want the Irish. And this is what they said about the people coming from Italy in the 1890s. The Irish were in the 1840s, 50s, and 60s. They said they're carrying disease. This is the way that you basically say these people are not like us. These people are less human than us. These people are not as good as us. Thank you for Horacio. Thank you for the call. Jenny in Plainview, New York. Shall we try it again? You are from South Africa?
Yes, I am. I love listening to you. I just wanted to say, first of all, when Savage describes what happened in South Africa, the cities don't look terrible. They're just, like you say, filled with black people now. And I'm actually a white South African. And the biggest problem in South Africa is not that black people took over, is that they dropped the education system and they privatized it.
Oh, my. Now, I know, when I was writing Unequal Protection, I came across a little factoid that blew my mind that I built into the book, that when South Africa was rewriting their constitution, there were three American companies, and I'd be doing it from memory, and I wrote this book 15 years ago, so I think I know the companies, but I'm not going to say their names, but you would recognize immediately these three large American corporations. They sent free lawyers over to South Africa to help them write their constitution, and those companies wrote into the South African constitution that corporations have full civil rights the same as human beings. They said, hey, we've been doing this in the United States for 100 years. It works just great. You need to do it in South Africa. And so corporate power is enshrined in the South African constitution as well, Jenny.
That's absolutely correct. And a lot of young people at that time was very upset about it. They said, we should write our constitution, the youth, not some corporation from America.
Right.
That was such a slap in the face. And also, I just wanted to make one other point. When I was back, I went back there 10 years ago, and I'm going back there actually now again. And what I noticed is that this, I mean, I'm an American. I actually see that we have a great gift called the public school system. And a lot of the school system being privatized, from what I've seen there, is disaster. You want to worried about this country going down, take away schooling and you'll see it go down very quickly. That for me is the biggest threat. And also just a note on Ebola. I'm kind of I'm not terrified of Ebola if I was in Africa and South Africa, because there's more of a awareness about it. But I am terrified in America because a lot of people don't have health care. And if you sick, people go to work, they don't stay at home because they can't take off from work. So, and Ebola presents like the flu, and you shed a lot of fluids, and that's the thought of it here. It's going to be as bad as it is in Africa, because the people don't have health care.
Yeah.
And they don't know how to handle it.
And so if somebody wants to go off on a rant about who to impeach or who to blame, it should be the people who are, which is basically the Republican Party, who are working so hard to prevent Americans, particularly working class Americans, from having health insurance in the United States.
Ebola couldn't have come to a better state than Texas. I wonder, once it starts spreading, and it will, because people don't have health care there.
Right, one quarter of the population.
I wonder how eager they're going to be for a good system once they see how dangerous a virus is that's not taken care of.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, you've got 6.8 million people in Texas who have no health insurance whatsoever. Rick Perry refuses to expand Medicaid and Obamacare to give it to them. And now you've got Ebola in Texas. And is Texas going to wake up and say, hey, maybe it would be a good idea if we had a, you know, a statewide public health system that actually worked and everybody was insured? Or are they going to continue down this road of just playing, you know, petty political games with these guys? Thank you for the call, Jenny. Very, very well said. Timothy in Edgewater, Maryland. Hey, Timothy, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Really love your show, and I enjoyed your book about the coming crash.
Thank you.
I wanted to talk about Wiener's idea of him saying that America's sliding from a first world to a second world country.
Yeah, that struck me as odd, because I thought the second world was the communist country. It was the Soviet Union, which no longer exists.
Exactly. That's what I learned in school as well, is that the second world is the communist country. So I guess maybe he's thinking that, you know, we're all going to become communists now under the socialist president. But
oh, well, there's actually logic to that, you know, in that kind of fevered worldview.
Absolutely. But it just shows a way of this kind of general ignorance that is spread and without even knowing. So people now can say, yeah, we're going to become a second world country. And that may become a meme now on the right. And then,
well, if the second world is the communist countries, China would be a second world country. And China now has over 300 million people in their middle class. The Chinese middle class, which in China is people making between $11,000 and $27,000 a year, which in the United States would be roughly the equivalent of around $50,000 a year. The Chinese middle class is now larger than the population of the entire United States of America. So if we were moving in the direction of a second world country and China is it, might want to reconsider that. Timothy, thank you for the call. Excellent point. We'll be back. We've got C.J. Worldman is going to be with us, Australian-born atheist author, columnist, and U.S. political and social commentator about radicalized right-wing religion in the United States.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And C.J. Worldman is on the line with us. He's an Australian-born author, columnist, and U.S. political and social commentator. An out atheist. His website's C.J. Worldman, W-E-R-L-E-M-A-N.com. And he wrote a brilliant piece for Alternet. Actually, I'm not sure if it originated there. CJ could tell us, but on the title on the Alternet site is Radicalized Right-Wing Activists Pledging Allegiance to Dangerous Agenda. CJ, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me on, Mike.
Thanks for joining us. Let's see. America, God is not done with America yet. This is Ted Cruz?
Ted Cruz doing his best to plagiarize ISIS.
Yeah, I find it really quite remarkable that on the one hand, you've got these right-wing Christian fundamentalists arguing that an Islamic state like Iran is dangerous because it's a theocracy. And then on the other hand, with no seeming cognitive dissonance whatsoever, arguing that America is a Christian nation, and which is implicitly a theocracy.
Absolutely. I mean, to say in one breath that Iran is dangerous because it's theocracy and then criticize Obama because his agenda is not based on the Bible, I mean, the disconnect, the mental disconnect is just extraordinary.
So where does this, how is this doing in the United States? I mean, I remember the Jim and Tammy Faye Baker, they were kind of non-political, and then it became Jerry Falwell, and it became highly politicized. And then in the Bush administration, taking all these young people out of Liberty University and populating the Justice Department with them and all the crazy things that happened as a consequence of that, the rise of the so-called religious right. George W. Bush was in charge of bringing the religious right into his father's campaign when he was running for president back in 1988. Where are we at right now in terms of the onslaught of theocracy in the United States?
Well, I think we're in a very scary situation. I mean, you only had to listen to any of the sound bites or the snippets of which came out of the Value Voters Summit over the weekend. Now, this is the Republican Party, more or less their annual retreat for religious extremists. You know, I like to call it a terrorist training camp, but without the outdoor exercise and the monkey bars. Now, I choose the word terrorist very carefully here because subscribers of far right-wing ideologies pose a much greater threat to America's national security than what the Islamic State does. These religious fanatics are already within the confines of the U.S., and they've adopted such a radical anti-government right-wing ideology that we're now seeing these threats carried out into actions. While America is becoming hysterical about that, the lady who was beheaded by a co-worker, who espoused Muslim or Islamic ideologies. Nobody's talking about the far-right Christian anti-government ideology of the Pennsylvanian cop killer, and very little attention was given to the motives, the anti-government far-right-wing ideological motives, rather, of the Millers in Las Vegas when they murdered two police officers and a Walmart employee. And then we had Clive and Bundy supporters pointing rifles at federal agents. Let's also not forget that the biggest massacre of any group was Anders Breivik, a very far right wing nutcase who slaughtered up to 70 liberal students in Norway. So with this movement is becoming radicalized. You only had to listen to Michelle Bachmann, who said that we should not be declaring a war not only on Islamic terrorism but Islam itself, and Jerry Boykin, who's a religious conservative pastor, praised ISIS or lamented the fact that Christians in this country are cowardly because they haven't adopted the same radical expression of violence as has ISIS in the Islamic State or in Syria and Iraq.
Yeah, and this is so antithetical to the history of the United States. I mean, Jefferson, Madison, even George Washington refused to assert whether or not he was even a Christian. Which delighted Thomas Jefferson. we've come really quite a long ways in terms of and you know, even Bill Clinton went along with this. The stuff that started in a small way in the Reagan administration really picked up steam with the Bush senior administration, the 1,000 points of light. these multi-million and now they're multi-billion dollar transfers of government money into religious organizations under the guise of various purposes. James Madison's first veto when he became president back in 1809, I guess. His first veto was a bill that would have given federal money to churches to care for homeless people, to provide them with health care and a place to sleep and food. And Madison vetoed that, saying, this is a state function. We've been running the poor houses since the George Washington administration. We're going to continue to run them. We're not going to cycle this money through the churches. And here we are now.
Correct, Tom. And you raise a good point with Clinton. Now, these people that attend these Values Voters Summit and these Christian conservative groups and people who subscribe to these kind of far right-wing ideologies, they're angry for the right reasons. They're angry for a middle class which has been gutted out, a welfare system which has been eroded, the rights of the labor force, collective bargaining has been stripped away. They see their savings dilapidated. They see their net worth fall. They're saddled with debt, medical bankruptcies, and so forth. And they've seen Wall Street be bailed out, but rather than, you know, underwater home mortgages be bailed out to the same degree or even to a similar extent. So they're angry for the right reason. They're angry capitalism has left these people behind, but they're blaming the wrong things. Rather than blaming, you know, the corporate totalitarian state, which has stripped away or absolutely murdered liberalism in this country, and liberalism meaning, you know, providing the economic needs for a people. And where you don't meet the economic needs of a people, which is the case of the United States, people turn to far right wing dangerous Christian ideologies or Islam or religious ideologies.
Yeah.
And there's a reason that the equivalent of the Christian right and these far right ideologies don't exist in places in healthy liberal democracies like Australia and Canada and Scandinavia and so forth and Western Europe, is because liberalism still thrives. Liberalism still meets the economic needs of the people, but we've abandoned the working class and the middle class in this country. Democrats have sold out liberalism, and now there's all these left to cling to is God's guns and so forth.
Yeah, yeah. And the hatred of people who are different, whether they be gay or brown or black or whatever. I'm with you. Boy, where do we go from here?
Well, where we go from here is we have to... You know, we have to salvage the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party has, you know, totally beholden to Wall Street, not to the same degree as the Republican Party, but they're almost there. There's a couple of shining lights left, but you can really, out of, you know, the 534, congressmen, including senators, there's really only two that you can say that haven't been completely, you know, bought out by Wall Street and corporate America, and that's Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. They're really the last two champions.
I think Sherrod Brown's done a pretty good job of fighting Wall Street. I mean, he's on the banking committee, and he takes these guys on regularly.
Sure, absolutely. But, you know, if you and I, if we do this naming exercise, we're probably not going to get to more than a half a dozen candidates.
Well,
so, you know, what hope is there for liberalism in the future when you have liberals, full card-carrying membered liberals, getting ready for Hillary?
Without debating the merits or demerits of Hillary Clinton, this process, strip people down, break them down, and then tell them that they need religion and that the people who broke them down, the people, you know, it's that black person who took your job. It's that brown person who took your job. I've been doing a fair amount of reporting on the Arab Spring, and it turns out that just prior to the Arab Spring, all of the countries in which these revolts happened were embracing neoliberalism as a consequence, you know, the austerity politics as a consequence of the IMF demanding it. So, CJ, we're flat out of time, but you wrote a great piece for Alternet. Thanks for dropping by and talking with us about it.
Right. Thanks, Tom. Anytime.
CJ Worldman.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
CJ's website is CJWERLEMAN.com. CJWorldman.com. We'll be back. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Ed in Klamath Falls, Oregon, watching Free Speech TV. Hey, Ed, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I've just been thinking about the situation in general. And I think the Republicans have just about browbeaten me to the point where I wouldn't vote now for a black man or a woman not because I don't think they can handle the job of president, but because if I do, the Republicans are liable to hold their breath until America turns blue, and that's bad for America. And I generally vote what's good for America. I don't vote as a Democrat or a Republican. I vote for who I think is going to be best for America.
Well, Bill Clinton was a white man, and they impeached him.
Oh, I know. It's gotten, the politics have gotten strange.
Yeah.
I admit I voted for Ross Perot, I believe, twice, because I was convinced free trade was going to destroy America, and it's done a pretty good job.
It has. It has. But I think that I'm hoping, Ed, that you're speaking tongue-in-cheek, that you would be reluctant to vote for a person of color because of the way the Republicans would freak out. We have to be acting in a proactive and positive fashion rather than be cowed by the reactionaries and the racists among us.
Well, now, think about it. I voted for Obama twice, and has the Obama presidency been good for America? No, it hasn't.
Well, I think it's been a hell of a lot better for America than a John McCain presidency would have been or a Mitt Romney presidency would have been.
No argument there.
So, you know, hey, you did a good thing. I mean, the fact that our political system is organized in such a way that we have basically two choices and you have to choose the lesser of two evils or maybe even the better of the two. I personally think President Obama's done a fairly substantial number of good things. There are some areas where I have very serious policy disagreements with him, and everybody knows what those are. I don't need to go through the list right now. But that's true of any politician. I mean, nobody's going to be perfect and do everything everybody wants. But I think that the whole concept of racializing politics has, I mean, this goes back to Nixon's Southern strategy, and we need to abandon that. Interestingly, by the way, right now, Ed, Rick Perry is holding a press conference about Ebola. It'll be, I can't listen to it and do the radio show at the same time, but it'll be fascinating to see if any of the reporters bother to ask him the obvious question, the simple question, Governor Perry, now that you have a contagious and deadly disease in your state, are you willing to expand Medicaid so that one quarter of the population of your state that right now does not have health insurance can be covered and have access to a doctor? Are you willing to do that, Governor Perry? And are you willing, for that matter, Governor Perry, to say that workers in the state of Texas have to, that their employers have to give them sick leave? So that somebody who's working, for example, in a restaurant and they start developing a fever and it might be Ebola isn't handing, you know, a plate that they've handled to some poor schmuck in a restaurant and thus, you know, spreading the disease all over the place. Governor Perry, are you willing to do that? Are you willing to give employees sick time so that they don't come to work sick out of fear of losing their job now that you have Ebola in Texas? And Perry has finished speaking now, so I don't know if anybody got to ask him those questions. I'll ask Victoria Jones about that in a half hour. But it's an interesting times we live in, Ed. Thanks a lot for the call. Always nice to hear from you. Although, be very careful. This what the Republicans want is for white people in America to say that they're not going to vote for a person of color because the Republicans are going to trash them. I mean, that's exactly what they want. It's the worst thing that any of us could do. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 20 minutes past the hour. And John in Ferndale, Washington, listening on KBAI. Hey, John, what's up?
Tom, I don't have many heroes left in this life, but you're one of them.
Well, thank you.
These kids that are coming from these war-torn areas in Central America are the result of Ronald Reagan's interventionist policies in Central America. I was in the military from 80 to 86, and we will never know what kind of democracies they could have had there or in Iran when Eisenhower overthrew Mossadegh. We'll never know what they could have been had we not meddled and created chaos. And
right.
I think that these kids have more to fear from coming here. They have more of a chance of getting sick coming to this country. And you stole some of my thunder, but I thought the same thought probably at the same time you did. And people who use the fear of disease, and you know, this is such a well-trodden path in human history, you know, from these ultra-nationalistic fearful, hateful people who don't want foreigners coming in, right? And it's, yeah, I loved your
point. Well, not only that, I mean, you go back to, and again, you know, Godwin's Law, whoever mentions Hitler first loses the argument. But I think it's worth noting that one of the big arguments that Hitler made about the Jews living in the Jewish ghettos was that they were rat-infested and disease-carrying people, that you know, in posters, in newspaper articles, in books. You characterize people like that in order to dehumanize them. Back to you, John.
My mother was born in 1925, and I went to integrated schools because I was born in 62. And we were on an Amtrak trip from Washington State down to California, and this black couple had been on the train, and they got off in Portland, I guess, and Amtrak didn't have a lot of blankets and pillows then, but so when they got off, it was like, ah, finally, a pillow. My mother hit the roof. It's like, dude, what are you doing? And I looked at her, and I was like, well, what are you doing? I'm using a pillow. Oh, don't do that. And it was this fear of the other that I'm so glad we are shedding. And the thing is, we are winning. And the racists are shrinking back. It's their death throes, I think. This death.
Well, I think this is why they're getting more and more shrill. Is, you know, it's Pat Buchanan saying, you know, hey, now that we have more people of color being born in the United States than white people, it's the end of civilization. I'm with you, John. Thank you very much for the call, and thanks for a very poignant story. And I agree. I think these kids coming to the United States from Guatemala, where they have a national health care system, have a lot more to fear here than they did there, other than, you know, being murdered. James in Strasburg, Virginia. Hey, James.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
You know, I just want to say, like, the Savage, and I think that, you know, that rhetoric that he's talking about when it comes to brown people and the Ebola virus, I think he's just perpetuating hatred. And as he perpetuates that hatred, it just manifests in violence, you know. So, I mean, that's basically all I wanted to say.
Well, I'd like to take it a little farther than that, because Michael Savage is not here to defend himself. And I present his information and I present my rationale for why people like him say this, but I think this is much larger than Michael Savage. You find this right across the board on among right-wing commentators, on right-wing websites, just right across the board. And this is not good for America to try to divide us along racial lines, along class lines. It's just not good for America. James.
I'm paranoid too.
Yeah, well said. Thank you very much. Anita in San Antonio, Texas. Hey, Anita, you know something about Texas, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Hi, Tom. Somebody asked whether Dallas was really that racist. Actually, Dallas, Houston, San Antonio, the larger cities in Texas, they're actually pretty progressive.
Yeah, they're fairly cosmopolitan.
Right. What you're saying, really, I think the polarization is more about rural versus urban, and not just in Texas. I think it's throughout the United States.
Yep.
It's not really red state, blue state. It's urban and rural.
Yes. Yeah, I agree.
Well, you know.
And then the suburbs are kind of caught in the middle, and they're starting to disintegrate, and they're fertile pickings for the people who would say to the people in the suburbs who are losing their jobs and their home is underwater and everything that, you know, oh, it's all the fault of, you know, fill in the minority du jour, right? Excellent point, Anita. Thank you for calling and making it and telling us about Texas. Kendall in Bridgewater, South Dakota. Hey, Kendall.
Yeah, I'm a little bit curious. What difference does it make if everybody has health insurance and none of we have an Ebola outbreak in America? I've read it takes 25 medical professionals to treat each patient. It would take 1,000 or 2,000 cases in this country to totally overwhelm the system. And at that point, it isn't going to matter a whit whether or not we have insurance or not.
Well, okay, let's go through Public Health 101. First of all, it doesn't take 25 medical professionals to care for one person with Ebola, although it may take quite a few because you've got a quarantine unit. But those numbers will change from place to place. But the point is that if somebody has health insurance and if they get sick, they're more likely to go see a doctor and they're more likely to get the care they need, which means that that sickness, particularly if it's a contagious sickness, is limited. The difference between Liberia and the United States is that Liberia has no public health infrastructure, and the average Liberian has no health insurance. And here in the United States,
wouldn't we be better off securing our borders and preventing the outbreak in the first place?
No. No, because this is not the only outbreak we have to worry about, Kendall. Do you know where two of the top 10 tuberculosis hotspots in the world are?
Well, India is one of them.
Well, New York and Los Angeles are two of them. It's already here. And it's not so much immigrant communities. These are just in poor communities. And again, it's because we have a very, very defective public health care system here that's run for profit first and for people second. So if we had a comprehensive, the two things that we need are, number one, a national health care system that actually cares for everybody, literally everybody, so people can get health. And number two, we are the only nation in the developed world, of the 34 OECD countries, the richest countries in the world, we're the only one that does not require employers to give people paid time off when they're sick. And as a consequence of that, people who are sick come to work, and they bring you your plate in the restaurant complete with some Ebola.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Actually, more frequently than Ebola, they bring you your plate with flu. But, you know, public health is public health. It's time for national paid sick leave as well. Boy, talk about just plain old, flat-out, bat guano crazy stuff. In Minnesota, you've got a prosecutor who is trying to put a mother in prison because she is treating her son, who has traumatic brain injury and suffers seizure disorders, with medical marijuana, with cannabis oil. This will be legal in Minnesota January 1st. The law has been passed. It's been signed into law. Trey Brown is this young man, his mother, Angela Brown. He suffered this injury at a baseball game 3 years ago. He said, "It just hurts in my brain everywhere. I really cannot explain the pain." He suffers uncontrollable muscle spasms and seizures, so severe he became suicidal and had to stop going to school. So last winter, mom took Trey to Colorado, where they found a doctor who prescribed this cannabis oil that doesn't get people high but does stop muscle seizures. I'm assuming this is the Charlotte's Web stuff. She said, quote, "Within an hour of him taking it, we could tell the difference. He returned to school. Teachers and administrators," this is Scott Kaufman writing over at Raw Story, "teachers and administrators wondered about his seemingly miraculous recovery." So Trey said, "Yeah, I'm taking medical pot." Boom. Call the cops. Police came in, trashed the house, seized the oil, charged mom with child endangerment. And now that he no longer has access to the cannabis oil, Trey's symptoms have come back. He's having seizures again. Real smart, Minnesota, or whoever this prosecutor is. Real smart. It's amazing. It's amazing. Kenyatta in Redlands, California. Hey, Kenyatta, what's up? Thanks for calling.
Tom, I wanted to make a couple of quick points. First, I want to thank you for having the courage as a white American to talk about white privilege. I have found, and you know, it's something that you continue to discuss, and I'm very, very happy to know that there are forward-thinking people like yourself to do that. But I do, with regard to that, want to chide you a little bit on a show that you did about a month ago. Your radio program is kind of delayed here in Southern California. So I went out and got Free Speech TV so I could see you live. There was a caller who had talked about, she was a white woman and she was married to, as she said, an African-American man. And she went looking for this apartment. And the apartment was available until they found out her husband was black. Essentially, it was a story. But she went on to say, well, they talked to him over the phone and they didn't know he was black because he sounds like a white person and he's very well educated. And that just, I thought I was going to have an aneurysm.
Right.
Because first of all, I don't know that from my experiences, as a fairly well-educated man, that white people have any monopoly in this country on intellect. And for her to make that connection and the fact that you didn't check her on it kind of disappointed me.
I'm sorry that slid by. Cornel West, I think most people just hearing Cornel West would say this is probably a black guy, and nobody doubts that he's one of the most well-educated people in the United States, for example.
True.
So, you know, yeah, obviously it's thank you for puncturing that balloon. If I can just speak to your white, you said thank you for having the courage to talk about white privilege. I think that the reason why most white people don't talk about white privilege is that most people don't even know what white privilege is. And so it's not a matter of courage. It's a matter of information, of knowing what I'm talking about. This is the thing. I mean, I think most people of color in this country don't have a clue how clueless most white people are in this country. Back to you.
Absolutely. You know, Tom, I want to tell you, along those lines, I've coined a term I call linguistic mind copulation, LMC. And as a black child, I remember there was a white kid lived next door. And we had little cap guns, you know, and we were out, cowboys and Indians, basically.
Sure.
And one day, I was about 6 years old, and one day he says to me, I'm going to be the sheriff. He says, well, you can't be the sheriff. I said, what do you mean I can't be the sheriff? You were sheriff last time. He says, yeah, but I'm white, and good guys wear white, and you're black.
Wow.
And bad guys wear black. And if you look at how insidious linguistically racism is in this country, especially for black people, think of some of the terms that are equated to black. Black temptation, grapes, black is sin, black sheep, black bald, blacklisted. Conversely, you have terms like white paper, the great white hunter, the great white shark, the great white way, good guys wear white. And what I'm getting at is that children, particularly black children, because of the imagery, let alone the superheroes and Santa Claus is white, and Jesus is supposed to be white, by the time they start school, this inferiority complex has already started, and conversely for white children, the superiority complex has already started, knowingly or unknowingly.
I agree. Have you ever heard Dick Gregory's from the, I think it was 65, 66, the album? It's a two-record set called The Light Side, The Dark Side, and he's got about a 10-minute riff on there about exactly what you're talking about. Are you familiar with that?
You there, Tom?
Yeah. Can you hear me, Kenyatta? Hello? Hello? Oh, he vanished. I think his phone croaked. Okay. Sorry. Anyhow, apropos of that, back in the 60s, I'll tell this story anyway. And I'm sorry you couldn't hear me. I don't know what's going on here. Hopefully it was just your phone. I was working in 1968, I think it was, maybe 69, at WVIC in Lansing, Michigan, which was during the day, a top 40 radio station, and overnight did progressive rock. And so I was the overnight DJ. I was on from 11 a.m. to 5 a.m., 11 p.m. to 5 a.m. And the station was running what was called back then the Drake format. Bill Drake was a legendary programmer at CKLW, as I recall, and he had come up with this format where you play, and we'd have bins of records, right? And so you start off the hour with a top 10, and then you go to a top 40, and then you go to a golden oldie, and then you go to a top 10. And there's this formula for the whole hour of exactly what the sequence would be. And you pull a record out of the front of the bin, you play it, you put it in the back of the bin, and so everything's always recycling exactly the way it's supposed to. And he had this whole formula. And part of the formula was never play two women back-to-back and never play two African-Americans, two blacks back-to-back, because it will, quote, create a sound. It'll make the station sound, you know, more female or more black. So one, you know, and I didn't frankly even know that much about this policy because I was doing the all-night show with album cuts. You know, I was playing like 10, 12 minute, you know, Inagata DeVita stuff, right? Without even realizing it, I played two women back to back. And Bob, the guy who was the station manager, calls me up. It's like, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning. He calls me up and he says, you just played two women back to back. You can't do that. You can't play women back to back and you can't play black people back to back, although he used a less friendly word. And I said, okay, and I hung up the phone and I thought about that for a couple of minutes and I put on an Aretha Franklin album and I followed it with, I don't remember who it was, but it was another black woman. And I just started playing black women. And he called me back and he started screaming at me. And I hung up on him. And he called back again. He was screaming at me. Three, four times he called. I hung up on him. And then I just stopped answering the phone. And I pulled out Dick Gregory's album, The Light Side, The Dark Side. And Dick Gregory has in the years since become a pretty good friend. And in fact, he was on our board when we started back in the late 70s, early 80s, when we started the Community for Abused Kids up in New Hampshire, the Salem Children's Village. Dick Gregory, who lived in Salem, Massachusetts, was on our board of directors for, 4 years. And so, anyhow, at that time, in 1968, I didn't know him. I just worshipped him. I thought he was, one of the smartest guys around. And so I took this out, this four sides, right, two records, and I put them on the two turntables, and I just started playing his album. And Bob stopped calling, and about 3 o'clock in the morning, the engineer shows up, who was this kind of friendly, nerdy guy who I got along with really well. We were both ham radio operators. And he shows up and he says, I'm supposed to kick you out. And I said, as a friend, I said to him, do you want to do that? Because, I mean, if he wanted to, I would have gone along with it. He says, do you want to do that? And he says, I don't think so. And he reaches into his pocket. He pulls out a bag of pot and some rolling papers and says, let's get high. And I'm not going to tell you how the story ends for the next couple of hours, but basically, he and I sat there until 5 a.m. I left. I turned the morning show over to Kevin McCarthy, who was the morning guy at the time, and as I recall. And when Kevin came in, I said, here you go. And that was it. I was fired. 2 weeks later, I had a job at another radio station in town that did not have those restrictions. But it's like that was so much America in the 60s, and it still is to a large extent. But apropos of all that, there is on that album, if you've never heard it, it is so worth tracking down. Dick Gregory goes off on this thing about how we use language in the United States and how we use the language of black and white, of light and dark. And the album is called The Light Side, The Dark Side. And how, as Kenyatta pointed out, kids by the time they're 5-6 years old, they're white or black, are inculcated with this notion that white is good and black is bad. Not explicitly applied to race, but applied to basically everything. We'll be right back. 15 minutes.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Yeah, I think that was the only time in my life I've ever been fired from a job, too. I'm actually fairly proud of it. We'll be back. And welcome back. Kiss Kid in Yucca Valley, California. Keep it simple, stupid, right? Hey, Kid, what's up?
Hi.
Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Hi, Tom.
Can you hear me?
It's Michael Savage, Rush Limbaugh. Bill Kristol, New American Century, all these blowhards, they're just sowing fear, suspicion of the government, Obama. Everybody is in danger, social violence everywhere. This is good for the factions that are working quietly to move their agendas forward. When you and your author friend Sessions brought up factions, you lit me up. I got into all my books, and I'm going to rant here a little bit. Factions are usually associated with selfish or powerful groups with their self-interest first. Their parties within a party, especially when marked by dissension or seditious behavior, irregular associations of partisans or cabals. Factions are parties of class, sect, caste, clan, religion, race, culture, business, or associations of like-minded people. Bundy and his bunch.
But you have to add a caveat to that, Kid, and that is that they're associations of whatever group that you want to name who are placing their own benefit above that of the common good.
Absolutely.
And that was what James Madison says right there in Federalist 10. I mean, he just lays it out. It's explicit.
Tom?
Yes, sir.
I haven't missed a class. I've had to DVR for the last week and a half.
Thank you.
Factions sow discord, conflict, friction, hostility, hate, confusion, and fear. They use catchwords and selected or altered history, discordant language to keep us all divided or mad, disgusted. Everybody better vote. I like goo goo government. And I'm going to leave you one last with a quote. When great questions end, little parties begin. Thanks, Tom.
Yeah, thanks a lot, kid. That's a good one. Judy in Mohawk, New York, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. Hey, Judy, what's up?
Good afternoon, sir.
Thank you.
You
wanted to talk about you would vote? Go ahead.
Yeah, I was listening to that gentleman that was talking about, you know, he wouldn't vote for a black candidate because of all the controversy it would cause with the Republicans.
I think Ed was speaking tongue-in-cheek. At least I hope so.
I hope so, because I wouldn't care if he was purple with pink polka dots.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that poor man has been I knew what was going to happen the minute, you know, he was inaugurated, and, of course, you know, McConnell and his... Somebody needs to change that man's terrarium, I'm telling you. but, you know, when I saw the pictures on the web about, you know, the watermelon patch in the White House and, you know, all that, I mean, oh, my God. I think the problem is that these old, white, arrogant, ignorant, expletives.
Mostly men, yeah.
Yeah, I think that they are afraid. They are afraid of an intelligent, articulate, educated black man.
There's no doubt about it. And frankly, they're afraid of any black man. I mean, this or person of color, period. And it's a tragedy. Judy, thank you for that. Welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you. Let's check in with Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com and free-don.org. And Ellen, it's so nice to have you in the studio.
Well, thank you
How
so much.
You on this
I
fine
like
day?
To be here. I see you have this great Sanders Warren sticker. I'd kill for one of those.
Maybe I can get one for you.
Okay, I'll contribute. You know okay. me.
Yeah.
I actually talked to my Vermont radio station this morning about, is Bernie going to do it?
Yeah.
He's apparently in Iowa quite a bit.
Oh, yeah. He's in New Hampshire.
We like that. Okay. Yeah. So, President actually has some support for his ISIL. About 50% of Americans in recent polling do support him, so that's kind of interesting. Also, Prime Minister Modi actually went up to Congress today, met with the Speaker, also met with Nancy Pelosi, and they...
Did he meet with them together or separate?
I think he did, actually.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I mean, they actually, you know, it's like anything else in this town. People get along when they don't say they do.
Right.
But anyway, so, they talked about economic opportunity and all that kind of stuff. Of course, they're not signing on to the climate change.
India's not?
No, so far no. But India is pushing the United Nations for a permanent seat on the Security Council. They say they represent 1.3 billion people.
They
deserve to be on it.
They
do,
and they're industrializing at an incredible rate.
Okay, now, from the CDC's own website. And I often go to the horse's mouth. We have that patient with Ebola from Liberia. He actually went to the hospital on the 26th of September, given antibiotics, and sent home. Despite the fact that, I mean, I've now learned a little bit about emergency rooms since I have Charlene and finishing medical school soon. It's an obvious question. If somebody comes and says they've just come from Liberia and you know that's an Ebola place, I don't think you send them home with just some antibiotics.
So this was
then he came back on the 28th, very, very sick, and was admitted to the hospital.
So this was an ER doctor who failed.
Absolutely.
Wow.
And you wonder, this is not rocket science.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, the president also met with Prime Minister Netanyahu.
You know, if I can just go back to that
for
a second. It would be fascinating to find out if the person that he saw in the ER was not a ER doc, but was an ER resident who was working a 70 or 80 hour week and had been for the last 6 months and so hadn't even seen any newscasts because they're so ragged and they're so distracted and they're so unaware of what's going on.
Well, you know, they have had Charlene working in Cleveland right now 7 days. She gets there at 6:30 and leaves around 6:30 or 7. 12 hours a day, no time off.
Right. That's like, that's my schedule.
But we're not, we don't have people's, I mean, we have.
But I'm paying attention to the news.
Right, exactly.
With my 70-hour week.
Exactly.
You know?
So you also wonder, can they educate emergency room doctors and residents and everybody else
like
that?
The other thing that this brings up is, why did nobody, when Rick Perry held a press conference, why did nobody say to him, now that you have Ebola in your state, are you willing to insure the 6.5 million Texans, the one quarter of Texas's population that does not have health insurance, expand Obamacare and Medicaid to all of them, so if somebody pops up with a fever, like maybe somebody who, you know, is living next door to this guy with Ebola and used the same doorknob to get into the building, somebody pops up with a fever, they will call the doctor rather than, and also, how about in Texas saying it's time to have a law that you get paid sick leave, so instead of going to their job at McDonald's and passing out burgers to people with Ebola, that they will call in sick and go to the doctor.
For sure. And we also know that why is Ebola spreading in these countries? Because there's no health infrastructure.
Right.
We used to say that there were 200 physicians in South Sudan, and the Minister of Health said to me, there are 41 physicians that are not
country.
Just, that are there permanently for an entire country of 10.2 million people.
Wow.
I mean, if you don't have health infrastructure in these countries, of course, if somebody comes.
Right. And in Texas, a quarter of
Texas
the Texans have,
same
have
issue.
Nothing. Right?
Exactly.
It's amazing.
Okay. Bibi Netanyahu was at the White House today. There was all this protestations of friendship and all this. And shockingly, the president called him Bibi. Not Prime Minister Netanyahu. They talked a lot about what they talked about the contributions that the United States made to Iron Dome. The president talked about that. Netanyahu said that the United States has given unflinching support to Israel, and that there is, and he also talked about Iron Dome. So clearly,
Iron Dome was the missile system that shot down the Palestinian rockets.
My guess is we're going to see a little more money in the Iron Dome category. That is what my read between the lines is about.
Okay.
If we have time for one more here.
We do.
Nancy Pelosi today talked about Elijah Cummings. Now, Elijah Cummings is the ranking member. He's from New Jersey. Maryland. He's the ranking member on Daryl Issa's Government Oversight Committee. He yesterday said the jury was out on the Secret Service director. Then he said, well, he thought she ought to resign. Then he tweeted that he wasn't really sure. Nancy Pelosi said basically he ought to know. He knows about these things. So we're not quite sure where Representative Cummings comes from.
Right. Well, in fact, there's a large question. You know, is there an institutional failure, or are we simply looking at Murphy's Law? You know, things happen. Things happen everywhere. You know, I mean, planes crash. Does that mean they
shut
down?
Well, there is a question about whether the Secret Service should have been taken out of the Department of Treasury or now in Homeland Security.
Well, and there's a question about whether the Secret Service should have been forced to lay off 550 employees because of sequestration.
That's a good one, too. Last but not least, we have a quick second. There is a congressional hearing about that sergeant who is in Mexico that came over the border with a gun, didn't realize he had it. But, of course, who did they go after? They went after President Obama.
I don't know
about
this
talking
story.
To them. Oh, you don't?
Yeah.
So there's this guy, and he's a sergeant, and he had PTSD, and he went over the border, and he got jailed by the Mexicans. And he said he didn't realize that he had this gun, this car, but he didn't realize that he was going over the border till it was too late. They found him with the gun. They imprisoned him. The American embassy in Mexico went and examined him and said he had a bad case of post-traumatic stress, and there's been a lot of pressure. But, of course, today what happened at the hearing is that they went after President Obama, saying, well, President Obama hasn't called the mother. That was sort of where that went.
That is incredible. Well, you know, there's nothing that Obama can do if they don't, you know, that they're not going to criticize him for. You got clip four? Can you pull it up really fast? We don't have time. Okay, we'll share these with Ellen in email. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com and free-don.org. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. Welcome back to the third hour of our program. And Dr. Arthur Kaplan is on the line with us, the director of the Division of Medical Ethics at NYU's Langone Medical Center. We have a link to his website over at our website, tomhartmann.com. It's pophealth.med.nyu.edu/division/medic, but you probably won't remember that, so you can easily find it over at tomhartmann.com. Dr. Kaplan, welcome back to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's great having you with us. We're hearing this Ebola case in Texas, and it may turn out that there are two of them, is being politicized pretty intensely, particularly on right-wing radio. We've got right-wing radio hosts calling for the impeachment of President Obama because this guy got into the country. I'm curious your thoughts on this and also your thoughts on Texas having one quarter of their population having no health insurance whatsoever, in part because the governor, Rick Perry, refuses to expand Medicaid under Obamacare, how that might play into the, I was going to say problem, it's probably a different word, but the challenges, let's say, that having Ebola pop up in the United States represents.
Well, what I would say is you've got a situation where people are going to probably do better if they impeach the Secret Service because somebody got in the White House than they are because somebody got to the state of Texas who turned out to have Ebola. Not only do we have this case, we're going to get a few other cases. People travel all over the world. They go for business reasons, family reasons. They travel lots of places, and some of them are going to pick up this disease, unfortunately. So we better be ready for a few cases and to handle those few cases, but I don't think it's impeachable, so to speak. It's kind of ludicrous. And at the other end, what I'd be more worried about if I was the right-wing radio folks, if they really care about spreading Ebola, is someone staying home because they didn't have insurance and they had symptoms and they said, I'm perhaps here illegally, or I'm perhaps here without insurance, or both. And I don't think I want to get into the hospital thing because it's going to cost too much, so I'll just stay here.
Right.
What you want to do is make it very, very clear. The president should announce this and say anyone who has any severe symptoms that are Ebola-like, go to the hospital. You will have your care provided to you.
Yeah, and it seems like there's also a third piece to that, and that is that of the 34 OECD countries, the 34 richest countries in the world, we are the only one that does not have a national policy, and in most states we do not have a policy, that allows people to take sick days, paid sick days when they're genuinely sick from work. And so as a consequence, you could have somebody who not only is afraid to go to the hospital because they're undocumented or because they don't have health insurance, but also is afraid that if they don't go to their job at, you know, fill in the blank that day, McDonald's or whatever, that they're going to lose their job. And so when they're feeling a little sick but not deadly sick yet, which apparently is the first couple of days, you know, they go and they pass burgers out to the general public. I mean, this could be a real mess.
Exactly. So, you know, why is the Ebola thing taking off in Western Africa? It's because they don't have a solid healthcare system with a good infrastructure that everybody can access minimally decent healthcare, and that's due to poverty, and that's what it is. But we have a broken public health system. We have a broken healthcare system here, and the virus would be more than happy to take advantage of that for just the reasons you're talking about. So much better to say, what are we going to do about beefing up surveillance? What are we going to do about making sure there are more ERs out there than there are? Tom, you know, we're about to start flu season, right?
Right.
What are the symptoms of Ebola?
They're the same as flu.
Exactly.
Right.
If you're not listening carefully and you get flu-like symptoms, I'm going to tell you what. We're going to have a big crowd at the ERs pretty soon because people hear flu-like symptoms. They may not hear flu-like symptoms and you went to Africa or, you know, you're taking care of someone with Ebola. They just hear flu-like symptoms.
Right. Well, and which raises the flip side of that is what happened on the 22nd or the 26th of September, you know, last week in Texas in this ER, is that this guy presents in the ER with a fever, feeling sick, says, I just came in from Liberia, and the ER doc gave him antibiotics and sent him home. And he stayed home for the next 2 days,
yep,
apparently infecting close family members. Another one of them is in the hospital now.
Yep.
And finally, after 2 days, he came back to the hospital and said, no, I'm really sick. And I was in Liberia. And at that point, they said, oh, really? Could this be the breakdown of the ER system? Could this be a consequence of maybe he wasn't seen by an ER doc? Instead, he was seen by somebody who wasn't as well trained, or he was seen by a resident who was working a 70-hour week or a 90-hour week and has been for months.
Could be all of those, but you certainly these days, anybody who comes in and complains they're sick, I do want to know where they're from, and that's not intrusive. That's part of the standard questions you'd ask any patient that you're trying to take care of. So it ought to be routine at the ER that you're just saying, and where were you from, and have you been in an airport lately, been on a plane lately, you know, just kind of building that into the thing. But I'm going to turn a question around for you. Can I do that?
Go for it.
Your next-door neighbor is from Africa. They have a visitor over, and she knocks on your door and says, he's on the floor. He's really sick. What do I do?
Dial 911, wouldn't you?
Is that what we should do? So, I don't know. Maybe we should be calling the fire department and say, hey, bring your goggles and your moon suit. If you dial 911, do they know where to take this guy? Do they take him to the closest hospital? Do they take him to the hospital that's got the quarantine unit set up? In other words, there's some basic information that we haven't dispensed out to each one of us. I'm glad that the CDC is doing all its contact tracing and all that. But I think every American should know what to do if they thought someone did have Ebola or was possibly infected with Ebola. What should you do? And I'd add to that, by the way, this is my one sort of nod toward the right-wing zany side of Ebola. If someone is sick and on the plane and looks pretty sweaty and sick and so forth, I might say something to somebody.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I'm going to restrict air travel all over the globe, but, yeah, you know, if someone seems sick, I'd say something. I think if you see that, you should say something.
So instead of Troy, do you have clip four? Can you play this? This is from, you know, I mentioned the right wing shows. This is from one of my colleagues, Michael Savage.
Mm-hmm.
This is just 18 seconds from his show yesterday.
The country will bust apart like the Titanic hitting an iceberg unless there is an impeachment hearing to expose everything that they're doing, either by design or purpose. You're not going to get to the bottom of it, but you're going to stop them in their tracks because they intend to grant amnesty to millions of illegal aliens. How many of them are going to be infected?
And
how many of them will be infected?
I can answer that.
Okay.
Zero.
Right.
They're not coming in that direction, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, instead of that conversation, and that, you know, I'm all in favor of free speech. People can have any conversation they want. But really, we need to be having this conversation about how do we strengthen our public health system in this country, and not just in the face of Ebola. I mean, they're talking about, you know, the 1918 flu possibly, you know, revisiting us. I mean, there's
a chance that tuberculosis could show up in a strain that's nasty. MRSA is around. We all know about that flesh-eating bacteria, MRSA.
Yep.
And
you got this new coronavirus that's coming out of Saudi Arabia.
And kids are sick from the circulating respiratory viruses. So
right,
it's pretty clear that we need a little upgrade on the public health side. And I think, again, these city and state public health departments have been chopped in terms of budget. That doesn't make sense in a world where anybody could be here at any time, whether we like it or not,
right,
in terms of coming from a place with some nasty infections. You've also got a prison system that has pretty poor health care, and they're a nice incubator for things. So, you know, let's talk sensibly about how you're going to control diseases. The way you do that is you get people healthier, you have better prevention, you have better surveillance.
Right. And a public health system that actually isn't filled with holes, where a quarter of the people in a state the size of Texas actually are not lacking health insurance.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Dr. Arthur Kaplan, the director of the Division of Medical Ethics at NYU's Langone Medical Center. Am I saying that right, Dr. Kaplan?
Langone.
Langone. Thank you very much.
Wondering, it's the guy who built Home Depot.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Interesting. Okay. Dr. Kaplan, it's always a pleasure to have you on. Thanks so much
for dropping by.
Good talking. We'll be back. It's 15 minutes past.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So are you hearing that conversation on your cable news shows or on your network news shows? What do we do about our public health in the face of Ebola? And welcome back. Tom, in Tucson, Arizona, watching Free Speech TV on the web at freespeech.org. Hey, Tom, what's up? Tom? Tom is not listening to... Are you... Tom, can you hear me? No, Tom's listening to his TV and not his phone. Carolyn in Natalia, Texas, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. Hey, Carolyn, what's up?
Oh, yes, thank you for taking my call. I was calling in response to the woman in Minnesota who had a son that was suffering from seizures, and she was giving him marijuana.
Right.
Yes, I have something that may help. I don't know if we still have religious freedom in this country. Genesis 1:29 says,
"The herbs shall be for medicine."
Pardon me?
"The herbs shall be for medicine."
Yes.
I know.
Genesis says that 1:29 that God has given every herb-bearing seed which is upon the face of all the earth. So
yep.
I see it as a gift from God.
Yeah, I think that pot is a gift from God, too. Or if you want to put it in a non-religious context, it's something that we co-evolved with that is useful. I think it's medicinal, and I think it's obscene to say that anything that you can grow in your backyard, you can go to prison for growing or possessing. I think it's just wrong. I'm with you, Carolyn. Thank you very much for the call. Jerry in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Hey, Jerry, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Hey, Mike, I look forward to lunch with you at the Union Station.
Oh, great.
I want to make a mention of your exposing Savage as Wiener. You criticized me a few weeks ago because I told you that Victoria Nuland was actually Victoria Noodleman Kagan. And I see that you're doing it now also. It's important.
Did I criticize you or did I say I just didn't know if that was true or not?
Okay. It's important for us to know who these people are and what their background is. And I am grateful that you have exposed Savage as a wiener.
He's no relationship, by the way, to the congressman, as far as I know. But,
No, he isn't. But Wiener is a racist, and he is of a brand that has almost created racism in the Old Testament.
Wait a minute. Are you attacking Michael Wiener, Michael Savage, because he's Jewish, Jerry?
Yes.
Okay. That's a cheap shot. I'm not going to go there at all. I mean, my point in identifying him as Michael Wiener rather than Michael Savage was not to say, hey, this guy is Jewish. It was to point out that, it wasn't even to point out anything other than that this is his real name. This is who he is. Anthony Wiener had no problem with that name, but Michael Wiener, it's not so good. So Michael Savage, tough. I think it's emblematic of the whole need on the part of the right to say, I'm a tough guy. Where I'm a man, I'm gonna kick butt. Really? I'm a savage. That's the savage nation. Really? Anyway, we'll be right back. It's 20 minutes past. Minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 3.8 million Texans are Medicaid recipients, but 6.4 million Texans, nearly a quarter of the population, lack health care coverage. And I don't have the statistics on what percentage of Texas workers do not have the right to take paid sick days, but I would bet the percentage is quite high. Because to the best of my knowledge, there's no law in Texas that says that employers have to offer paid sick days, and Texas has been leading the nation in creating low-wage jobs. You know, there's a bunch of other things that are going on in the world that I wanted to bring up, and one of them is an article that was over at QZ.com titled, "Incredibly, Subprime Loans Are Driving the U.S. Economy Again." If I can step off the Ebola topic for just a moment, I will, after the bottom of the hour, if you want to talk about these things, I will pick up your calls on any of the things we've talked about today. But this is a big deal. The author of this piece, Matt Phillips, writes, "If you think investors would be wary of investing in subprime bonds after the crisis, you'd be wrong. For one thing, investors have learned that Americans rely on their cars so heavily to get to and from work that they're often willing to prioritize car payments over other bills." And so what has happened is that, you know, the crash, the frantic bubble from 2000 to 2006 that fueled what became the crash of 2000, the Republican crash of 2006, 7, and 8, the financial crisis, was subprime mortgages and the securitization of subprime mortgages, taking $1 million worth of subprime mortgages, bundling them together, or taking $1 billion, bundling them together, slicing them into $1 million pieces, and then saying, and now we're going to buy a $10 million insurance policy on this $1 million worth of mortgages, and then we're going to buy a $100 million policy on the $10 million policy, and then we'll buy $1 billion policy on the $100 million policy, and these were called asset-based securities and ABSs. And here he's writing, "By looking at the credit markets where auto loans are packaged up and sold as securities to investors, asset-based securities were a key source of instability during the financial crisis. In recent years, one of the fastest growing sectors of the ABS market has been the market for subprime auto loans." That's right. Subprime auto loans. They're now doing the same thing with them, car loans, that they did with mortgages. Get ready. You know, I wrote this book, The Crash of 2016, for a reason. Get ready. And it's like, this could be fixed, by the way. However, it would take an act of Congress. And what they would have to do is undo the damage that was done by Phil Graham and his merry band in 1999 and 2000 with the Commodity Futures Modernization Act and Gramm-Leach Bliley, blowing up Glass-Steagall, deregulating the banksters. And then his wife, Wendy, earlier on, when she was in charge of the regulatory agency that oversaw commodity traders, basically deregulating commodity traders. And this set up the crash. And now they're doing it all over again. Okay. Yesterday, I told you, if you thought House Republicans were crazy now, just wait. I was going to share Laura Claussen's article with you. I never got to it. So Jody Heiss, Glenn Grothman, these two are probably going to be elected to the House of Representatives this year. They're Republicans running in Republican districts who are, you know, almost certainly going to win simply because they're Republicans. And this is pretty strange, pretty strange stuff. There's a bunch of these guys who are coming out now. And a congressman who thinks evolution and the Big Bang Theory are lies straight from the pit of hell, to one who wants to put the Ten Commandments in public buildings, thinks the First Amendment doesn't apply to Muslims, says women in politics, quote, "If the woman's within the authority of her husband, I don't see a problem." These quotes are from Congressman Paul Brown and from candidate Jody Heiss. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens when even more hard right crazies get elected to the U.S. House of Representatives. So far, you know, they've basically shut down everything, although the Republican Party institutionally has been with them on this. The caucus room conspiracy is just rolling along, right? Like, no problem at all. We'll just keep blocking everything Obama does, everything that might have anything to do with Obama, anything, even Republican initiatives that Obama has agreed to. We're going to block that because, after all, he's a Democrat. I mean, we, you know, the Republicans impeached Bill Clinton. and he's a black guy. We can't, the Republicans are saying, we can't let this guy have a legacy. Just like they said the same thing about Jimmy Carter. Can't let him have a legacy. Got her to destroy his legacy. The Reagan Legacy Group, Campaign Committee, whatever it's called, that was set up after the Reagan presidency to name a building after Ronald Reagan in every congressional district in the United States and every country around the world, a building or a statue. They renamed National Airport here in Washington, D.C., Reagan National Airport. It's amazing how many people refuse to call it Reagan. They say, I'm going to go out to National Airport. I've had cab drivers, you know, who will not call it Reagan. It's quite remarkable. But the flip side of the campaign to basically elevate Ronald Reagan into godship is the trashing of Jimmy Carter, the only president in basically since LBJ not to have a war. I would argue probably the only president since LBJ not to get rich after leaving the White House. Jimmy Carter not only was a good man, is a good man, speaks out with a clear mind and moral conviction. And the Republicans think that the way to destroy Obama is to compare him with Jimmy Carter. I saw another op-ed yesterday talking about, you know, Jimmy. No, Obama's just Jimmy Carter. He's, you know. Well, Jimmy Carter, in my opinion, is a damn good president. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And I'm curious, are you frightened of Ebola coming to a town near you? And if so, why? So Ebola in the United States, what does it mean? Does it mean that we should all get hysterical? Does it mean that we should impeach the president? Does it mean that we should call for the end to the CDC? Or does it mean that we should say to Governor Rick Perry, since the Ebola has popped up in Texas, hey, Governor, one quarter of your state does not have health care or health insurance. One quarter of the people in the state of Texas do not have health insurance. Are those people, if they get sick with Ebola, more likely to go to the hospital where they will face a large bill or not? And your state does not have any sort of paid leave policy for workers. So, you know, could somebody who is sick with Ebola, before it gets so bad that they basically can't function, you know, the first couple of days where they're symptomatic and contagious, but they can still walk around, they just feel like crap, that they might, you know, and it seems like the flu. There's no shortage of stories of people in the United States who have the flu, who go to work because they can't afford to lose their job. They go to work at the restaurant and sneeze all over your plate back in the kitchen, and then it comes out to you, and you don't even know it. Right? Or is that just fear-mongering? No, it's actually happening. Because we don't have paid sick days in this country. It's actually happening because people don't have access to health care in this country. And that's all happening because of right-wing policies. Junior in Adrian, Minnesota. Hey, Junior, what's up?
Let me get you on speakerphone.
Thank you.
All right. And thanks for taking my call. I've got a couple of really interesting points that I want to bring up. I hope I don't mess them up in the process. But
what
I called with is, you know, when I first started working with the disabled, right when I came out of college about 20 years ago, I actually worked with the disabled in an old TB sanitarium. That's where they used to house these people. And that kind of tells me one thing. TB and polio and other diseases like that were really common in this country at one point. And the fact that they were willing in 1990 to house the disabled people in a TB sanitarium tells me that there was one time where we faced these diseases like TB and polio and stared them down and eradicated them.
Yeah, and they were incurable at the time, by the way.
Yeah, literally to the point where we could house our disabled in a place where we used to warehouse people with TB.
Right.
And it's just, you know, the I want to get to the second point, so I don't want to screw this up. So there was a caller earlier about mentioning her son being on cannabis oil. I'm a Minnesota resident, and I have a condition where my tendons are calcifying, which is making it progressively harder and harder for me to get around and do basic things. I still hold a job and everything. I don't smoke. Mm-hmm. I don't use marijuana. I don't use, you know, any kind of illegal drugs as of anything. But certainly this would be something that would be interesting to me. The problem is I work out of state. I work in Iowa, and I work in a place that tests for, you know, THC and stuff like that.
So you'd lose your job if you took medical marijuana.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. This is why we need to, A, at the federal level, just deschedule marijuana altogether. And, in fact, I would say, you know, all of these, quote, illegal drugs should be descheduled. But, yeah, that's a larger and somewhat different argument. But with pot, number one, you know, just – and in fact, Eric Holder the other day, I think, said he was not opposed to, you know, considering rescheduling marijuana so that the states can go ahead with whatever they're doing, you know, whether it's what Washington.
Exactly. And I understand why my doctors and everything are very hesitant on prescribing anything narcotic for me. I understand how, you know, I understand how addictive and how problematic drugs like hydrocodone and oxycodone can be. I mean, yeah. I've heard the stories from many.
Well, those drugs, I mean, you know, the opiates are so addictive and so deadly. I mean, they're one of the leading causes of death in the United States is opiate overdose. And in those states where you have medical marijuana, they've seen between a 5% and 7% decrease in overdose deaths because people, instead of taking opiate painkillers, are smoking pot, which is a very effective painkiller. So,
and granted, I was born with bad lungs. I was born with very bad allergies, crack bronchitis. So I've never smoked anything in my life. So, I would never smoke anything to try and make myself feel better. But the prospect of using cannabis oil to help relieve the pain so that I can walk normally again. I mean, six years ago, I was walking 30 miles a week, working two jobs. I was in shape. And then, you know, my Achilles tendon started to calcify and turn to bone, and all of a sudden I can't walk anymore, and I'm gaining 60, 70 pounds, you know, and it's like all of a sudden I'm terribly out of shape, and I'm holding water, and I'm getting congestive heart failure. It's like, I want something that can make me functional again.
Yeah. Junior, I'm so sorry to hear that. I thank you for the call, and thanks for sharing your story. I wish you the very best, sir. Alan in Miami, Florida, you wanted to comment on my story about being fired from a DJ job back in 1968 for playing Dick Gregory on the radio.
Yeah. No, I work down here. I'm originally from New York, but I work down here in Miami, clubs and bars and stuff as DJ. And I go through the same issue all the time, which is why I don't usually call up, but I just had to call up when I heard you tell that story. Because down here in clubs and bars, they'll tell you specifically, the managers, you know, to try to not play a lot of hip-hop or music that's going to draw more of, like, an urban crowd.
Which is code for black people.
Exactly. And they explain it. I've talked to, like, one of the owners of a few clubs down here, and he explained it to me that, you know, he's trying to say he's not Adolf Hitler and he's not trying to be racist, but it's just a matter of purely, like, financial decision. That he doesn't – what he says, he doesn't want people standing around drinking one beer all night. I mean, that's, you know, I don't know, you know, whether that's right or not as far as, you know, if he makes less money off of that. Yeah. No matter what, I have a moral problem with it, just the way I was raised up.
Yep.
But it's really, the reason why I wanted to call in is because it's really an issue that everybody that I know down here that works as a DJ experiences constantly.
Hmm.
And this is like night in, night out. Like, you might get texts from a manager saying, it's getting a little bit too dark in here. Change up the music.
Wow. So it didn't die in the 60s when I got fired for...
No. My point is it's definitely the same situation. It's still
amazing.
100%.
Amazing. Alan, thanks for sharing the story with us.
No problem.
One can hope things get better. But thank you. John in Los Angeles. Hey, John, what's up?
Hi, Tom.
Hey.
Yeah, I was wanting to follow up on your topic of Ebola and the healthcare system, and specifically people who stay or go to work, don't stay home when they're sick. And you know, there's a bigger issue with in the public sector, and nobody really knows about it except people who work civil service or work in a public situation. People don't take vacation days, or don't take sick days, rather, because they save them. And they go to work sick, and they refuse to go home, even when their supervisor says, you're sick, go home. They don't. And they put people at risk. Their department is now full of sick people. They transmit the disease to one to the other. And it happens all the time.
Yeah.
And all you have to do is talk to somebody who works in a local government office in downtown Los Angeles or some other metropolitan area, and they will tell you people come to work sick. They yeah. sneeze. They cough. They drink from the water fountains. They go to the restrooms and don't wash their hands. You know, I'm more worried about TB, meningitis, MRSA, bird flu, H1N1, enterovirus, staph infection, salmonella, bubonic plague, common cold, pneumonia, all these problems are way more serious than Ebola
yeah.
will ever be in this country.
Yeah. I'm with you. And we need paid leave policies across the country that are enforceable and that are common sense and that are not punitive to people. And we need a national healthcare infrastructure that actually works. And Texas is the poster boy. It's the poster child for one quarter of the state has no health insurance. If Savage wants to talk about the third world, that's the third world. Thanks, John. James in Chicago. Got a minute, James. You wanted to talk about neoliberalism?
Yeah, I just wanted you to kind of define it a little bit compared to regular liberalism.
Oh, they're night and day.
It was embedded in, yeah, I understand, and how it was embedded or took root with Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan. And how it's the contract of America the Republican conservatives have been pushing. It's basically the Kool-Aid.
Yeah. When you hear neoliberalism, translate that in your brain into austerity economics, Reaganomics, Thatcheronomics, right-wingnomics, whatever. In Europe, they refer to what we would call libertarian economics or raw laissez-faire economics. They refer to that as liberalism. Here, we refer to FDR-onomics, to Keynesian economics, as liberalism. So we have, you know, different definitions of the term. There's a consensus, though, between American economists and European economists that neoliberalism, the new liberal, neo is Greek for new, the new liberalism is that European-style liberalism, that is the European-style of what we would call conservative economics, be imposed. So, yeah, James, you're absolutely right. It's a messy, messy term. Thanks a lot for the call. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
15 minutes past or before the hour on the Tom Hartman Program. Check out our website, by the way. We recently rebooted it, TomHartman.com. And welcome back. Let's see here. Paul in South Lyon, Michigan. Hey, Paul, you wanted to disagree with C.J. Worldman?
Yeah, thanks, Tom. First, I wanted to point out, though, that we didn't have any wars under President Clinton. We had 8 years of peace and prosperity. What he did was...
What about Bosnia and Serbia?
He ended genocide in Bosnia with airstrikes, not a single casualty. So, you know, that was,
okay.
You know, not a war. Anyway... Yeah, CJ was right about a lot of things, but he's dead wrong in blaming the Democrats, which only leads to less progress and more Republicans in office. Since he was short on facts, here's a few. The Republicans are the ones who gave us Citizens United and Hobby Lobby, etc. All the Democrats on the Supreme Court voted to protect us. The Democrats re-regulated the banks, Dodd-Frank, Volcker Rule, which would have been stronger except for Republican obstruction. Virtually all Democrats are for raising the minimum wage, protecting Social Security, Medicare, and women's rights. Virtually all Republicans are against these things. And there's two ways for billionaires and their Republican stooges to keep a stranglehold on us. One is to falsely claim that the Democrats are communists and socialists, And the other is to say Democrats are progressive enough. Mm. And that's what a lot of so-called progressives are doing. And then maybe this guy's one of them. I don't know.
Yeah. I must have missed something he said, because I was distracted while he was on the program. I was looking for a piece of paper there for a minute or so. I didn't recall hearing CJ blame Democrats for these things, but it may well be. And there are some, you know, the blue dog, yellow dog Democrats who jump into this stuff. But I agree.
Yeah.
I agree with you. It is not the Democratic Party institutionally. And by and large, it's not Democrats. Excellent point, Paul. Thank you for correcting the record. Lynn in John Day, Oregon. Hey, Lynn, what's up? Lynn, you are on the air watching Free Speech TV in John Day. No. Okay, let's try Brad in Atlanta, Georgia. Hey, Brad, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's on your mind?
I think it's Fred, Tom.
Fred.
Misunderstand.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. I heard you mention President Carter earlier and thought you might be interested to know that today is his 90th birthday.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I live just a couple of miles or so from the Carter Center Library and so forth. So, I get emails from him and saw that today's his birthday.
Wow.
Yeah.
Troy, pull up we will play it after the break here, the clip of Jimmy Carter giving his energy speech back in 1978, I think it was. Jimmy Carter was, in my opinion, he was one of our great presidents. He was a good and decent man in office and after he left office. And
I agree, and I think that we really, really, really need to get back the morality. And I don't mean sexual morality and the stuff that the right-wing Christians talk about all the time, but get back to fundamentally loving our neighbors, loving our enemies, and getting over our fear of everybody.
Right. Right. I'm with you, Fred. I'm absolutely with you. And Jimmy Carter not only lived that in the White House to a large extent, has also lived it in his private life since then. The Carter Center is doing amazing work. Jimmy Carter himself has done amazing work. He speaks the truth. How's his grandson is running for what down there in Georgia? Is it governor, Senate?
Let's see. He's running for governor, and Sam Nunn's daughter is running for senator.
That's right. How are they both doing?
Sounds like I haven't followed real, real closely, but sounds like it's almost competitive this year, which is
very
a shock to me.
Very interesting.
In Georgia, you know?
Yeah, me too. I lived there for 13 years. Fred, thanks a lot for the call. 10 minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you. The big question that should be being asked about Ebola in Texas is it a danger to us that Rick Perry's policies of refusing and the Republican legislature of Texas refusing to take Medicaid expansion, refusing to expand Obamacare in that state, and thus leaving one out of four Texans with no health insurance whatsoever, even though the vast majority of them, in fact, virtually 100% of those people have no health insurance whatsoever, are working. So they're coming to work sick and have no health insurance. Are Rick Perry's policies putting people in Texas and all around the United States, for that matter, at considerable risk? I think the answer is clearly yes. Fred just called from Georgia and said that today is Jimmy Carter's 90th birthday. I haven't independently verified that, but I believe him. And whether it is or it isn't Jimmy Carter's birthday, I'd just like to share with you, because he was such a great president. He put us on the path to energy independence. We would have, the world would be such a different place right now had Jimmy Carter had his attempt to get reelected not been sabotaged by Ronald Reagan's campaign, Bill Casey specifically, and maybe George Herbert Walker Bush, but certainly Bill Casey, who ran his campaign, cutting a deal with the Iranians to hold the hostages for a full year until the election of 1980. Had that not happened, Jimmy Carter certainly would have been reelected, and we would have a rational energy policy in the United States. Here's Jimmy Carter back in 1978. He actually got this legislation passed. In fact, if you travel around the country looking for a house to buy, and Louise and I have done this in several states now over the years, and you know, we love the idea of having a house that's off the grid or energy independent or highly efficient. What you will find is that there are all these houses all over the country that are off the grid or that have, you know, are mostly 90% solar, 80% solar, you know, that sort of thing. They were all built in 1978, 1979, and 1980 while Jimmy Carter was president, because he had put into place these programs that basically gave people tax cuts and subsidies for building energy efficient homes. This is what he said when he was when signing this legislation, promoting this legislation.
The energy crisis is real. It is worldwide. It is a clear and present danger to our nation. These are facts, and we simply must face them. What I have to say to you now about energy is simple and vitally important. Point one, I am tonight setting a clear goal for the energy policy of the United States. Beginning this moment, this nation will never use more foreign oil than we did in 1977. Never.
And then he went on to talk about a solar bank for the United States. Do you have that, Troy?
Here we go. Moreover, I will soon submit legislation to Congress calling for the creation of this nation's first solar bank, which will help us achieve the crucial goal of 20% of our energy coming from solar power by the year 2000.
And not only, I mean, he did it, right? He put solar panels in the White House. We were moving in that direction. We might not be talking about global warming right now if Jimmy Carter had been president for another 4 years. It's just amazing. Norma in Montgomery, Alabama. Hey, Norma, you want to talk about what we should really be scared about? Norma in Montgomery? Norma is not there. Okay. David in Los Angeles. David, can you hear me?
Oh, yes, I can hear you very well.
Okay, great. You're on the air.
I just want to say that I believe that this Ebola is God's way of punishing Texas for George W. Bush and Rick Perry.
You have been talking to Pat Robertson, haven't you?
Yes, yes. The hurricane in Haiti was God's way of punishing gays. So this is obvious. God is once again punishing the very, very bad people, Rick Perry and George W. Bush and Texas, for nurturing them.
Yeah, this reminds me very much of right after 9/11, Jerry Falwell and was it Pat Robertson? I'm not sure. We'll see if we can find the clip. I'm pretty sure it was Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson were sitting around talking about this, and he says, "You know, I think that this is God's punishment for allowing homosexuality in America." And you know, right. David, thank you for the call. Excellent. Tongue in cheek, but yeah. Sylvia from Chicago. Hey, Sylvia.
Oh. Hi, a great admirer of yours. I'm from Poland, so I just want to say that government took care of disease, spreading our disease in Poland in a way that I don't know if it would be possible here. We have smallpox coming on the ship by the sailor. They close out area. They took a doctor who volunteered. Two died. I was 16 then.
Wow.
16. And in a month, it was contained.
Now, this was
rampant. And what they did, we all went to X-rays every year. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we have a national medicine. So mm-hmm. we were in the doctor's office when we felt bad. But that was the way that they contained it, because people who got sick, they sent to sanatoriums in
yeah.
mountains, you know, and they just contained the disease. They
yeah. Was this back when Poland was part of the Soviet Union?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so everybody had, you had national health care system. Everybody had health insurance.
Yes.
Or had health care, actually.
You could go to private doctor, and it's the way. You know, if you have money and you don't want to wait, you could go. I went, there were like group of 3-4 doctors, or one doctor, you know, had office. And you went there and you paid the money.
Yeah.
And it was reasonable. It was like, now it would be $50, $75 for the visit. So it was reasonable. But government had anything to do with those private doctors.
Yeah.
However, you don't pay when you go into the hospital. You don't pay when you have...
Sylvia, we're out of time, but you have nailed it. This is how you deal with a public health crisis. You have a national public health system that covers everybody. Sylvia, thank you for the call. Thanks for listening to WCPT. It's the end of the day. We will be back tomorrow with more wild and zany craziness from the right wing, more interesting perspectives from the rest of America, the vast majority of America in this center-left nation. And don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It actually requires you to show up. Peg, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.